Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes, like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome.
Having a lover or friend who regards you as a living, growing, criatura being, just as much as the tree from the ground, or a ficus in the house, or a rose garden out in the side yard. Having a lover and friends who look at you as a true, living, breathing entity, one that is human, but made of very fine and moist and magical things as well. A lover and friends who support the criatura in you. These are the people you are looking for. They will be the friends of your soul for life. Mindful choosing of friends and lovers, not to mention teachers, is critical to remaining conscious, remaining intuitive, remaining in charge of the fierce light that sees and knows. The way to maintain one's connection to the wild is to ask yourself what it is you want. This is the sort of seed from the dirt. One of the most important discriminations we can make in this matter is the difference between things that beckon to us and things that call from our souls. And this reading, again, we come back to Women Who Run With the Wolves from Clarissa Pinkola Estes. And I just feel like that reading is perfect for my conversation with Jarvis Green. So welcome back to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. As you know, this is the space where we talk about navigating profound life transitions, the moments that shake us, the endings we never expected, and the ways we find our way forward. So today I'm sitting down with someone who knows a thing or two about reinvention. Jarvis Antonio Green is a stage director, producer, and cultural worker based in Montreal. He is the founder and former producing artistic director of JAG Productions, a Vermont and New York City-based company dedicated to creating spaces for Black and queer storytelling in the American theater. During his tenure at JAG, he directed and produced acclaimed productions including Choir Boy, Next to Normal, Fences, and Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, and launched JAG Fest, a new works festival for Black playwrights. Jarvis's visionary leadership helped shape JAG into one of the leading incubators for the Black theater in the U.S. His artistic practice lives at the intersection of community care and cultural reclamation, always centering stories that awaken possibility and reimagine freedom. Now based in Montreal, Jarvis is expanding his creative work across mediums, writing his first book, and hosting Le Cookbook Club, a seasonal gathering where shared meals and staged readings spark storytelling and connection. And that's where I met Jarvis. I was able to go to the first gathering of Le Cookbook Club, which was absolutely fantastic. And So after many years of incredible work, he made the decision to close JAG in June of 2024. And since then, he's been through a season of endings. His beloved dog passed in July 2024, and his relationship ended in 2024. So what we're going to talk about today is what happens when life demands that we let go. And how do we move through the grief of that transition? And how do we trust the new beginnings that's waiting on the other side? So we're going to talk about all of that, mourning what was, trusting what's next, and the slow process of stepping into a new version of yourself. So Jarvis, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. How are you arriving today? What's going on with you?
How am I arriving today? I I just got back from the gym. I was kicking and screaming. I did not want to go, but I went anyway because I need to move my body. So, I just got from the gym not too long ago. I dropped my dog off at doggy daycare,
Love.
which is great because she's still a puppy and she needs dog friends to keep up with her energy. Like my four walks a day is still not enough. So being with other dogs for literally 8 hours a day is really great for her energy at 9 months old. So, but I'm coming into this conversation gosh, I would say I'm feeling like very soft today. Yeah, I'm feeling very soft.
Okay. I like that. So you, and by the way, you're the second person that I've talked to in 2 weeks that takes their dog to doggy daycare
Really?
in
Okay.
Canada.
It's life-changing. I mean,
Oh.
and she was in this may be too much information, but she was in heat for like 3 weeks, so we couldn't go to the dog park. We were just going on walks. So this is like my little treat to her for being kind of pent up in the house for 3 weeks. And so she's just gonna go for 3 days, and then it's back to me and her and our little adventures throughout the day. So
Oh, that is so cute. No, and it's not too much information. And what's your baby's name?
her name is Rhubarb.
Oh. Not rhubarb.
Yes, Rhubarb. Yes,
Okay.
yes.
All right. So, I want to start our conversation with JAG Productions. So you built something incredible. You built something that gave space to Black and queer artists in the American theater, and then you made the decision to close the doors. What took you to that moment? Like, how did you make that decision? Well, hang on. Let's back up.
Sure.
What led you to create it first? Like, tell us a little bit about that. Let's rewind.
Yes. What led me to create JAG Productions is I was living in New York, and I was getting frustrated. I was working mostly as an actor. And what that really meant was that I was waiting tables and I was like doing regional theater gigs, like going to Seattle to do work, going to Chicago to do work, going to New Jersey to do work, and never really booking anything in the city. And I was frustrated with the type of roles that I was getting cast as. Like I was a musical theater actor, so I was in productions of Oklahoma, and like there was a lot of like colorblind casting. So there were like shows where they would put black bodies in them, but then we wouldn't have conversations around like how race is integrated into this production of like 12 Angry Men or whatever. And so I hit this kind of I hit a point in my like career where I was like, I'm looking for something different. And there were some big life changes and transitions happening then. Oh, this is so funny. A person that I was we had a platonic relationship, dancer, really good friend. We had a breaking up, essentially. And when I was, when I got to this point where I was just like over my career and like what I was doing, like the relationship that I had with this person was starting to get some tension because I was working and they weren't. And so there was like a lot of tension in the relationship. And I kind of hit rock bottom because this relationship ended and I was just like flailing on like what to do. I moved out of my apartment. I was sleeping on friends' couches and I was like, what does this mean? What do I need to do? And so a dear friend of mine, Jonah, who I met out in Seattle when I was doing regional theater out in Seattle. I lived in Seattle before New York. And Jonah had an aunt that lived in Queens, and he was helping her move out of an apartment into another place. But he was also going to Vermont to be with his girlfriend, who was going to this like integrative health school in Montpelier, which is the capital of Vermont. And she's basically a witch. She's a herbalist, and she makes all these potions, and she's brilliant. And she was at the school, and he was like, I'm gonna go to Vermont to be with her. I know you're having a lot of life changes right now. It will also be great to have like a friend while I'm there going to this new state or whatever. And so he was like, I'll be in New York. I can pick you up and we can go to Vermont and live on this farm, essentially.
Wow.
This homestead
Wow.
and then see how it goes. And so I arrived in Vermont and I started working on this farmstead, and I was really, really fascinated at how there was this farm called Fable Farm, which I was doing some work at, and I was really fascinated at how they were building community through agriculture, art through agriculture. Like they had a CSA, which is community supported agriculture, and folks would come and pick up their vegetables every Thursday. But it wasn't just like come get your vegetables and leave. It was like this big community gathering where folks would pick up their vegetables. There would be music. Sometimes there was theater. It was like this really beautiful setting. And I was really fascinated at how like the integration of life and art, like that, the intersection of that was really kind of fascinating for me, and how these farmers were building their lives around like growing food, but like also connecting it to like things that they love, which is like art making and community building. And so I ended up staying a season and met a woman by the name of I'm skipping part of the story because it's long. but I ended up staying, started a little community arts organization called Barn Arts, which is st in this town called Barnard, Vermont, which is very cute, a play on words. But I created this community arts organization called Barn Arts, which is still thriving. They have a community theater, they have a youth program every summer. 20 to 30 kids come together and put up a musical. They have various different programs, and so that organization is still going. And I wanted to kind of expand my work, and I met a woman by the name of Kathleen Dolan. The Dolan family is really big in New York City. Kathleen Dolan lives in Vermont, and her family, the Dolan family, they like, her brother owns the New York Knicks. They have, Radio City
Gotcha.
Music Hall, like, and she was like, would you be interested in starting a theater program for my community arts center? And so I did that for about 3 years, and then I hit that wall again. I'm like, oh, I'm programming shows and stuff that's not truly like reflecting like my humanity. Like there are things of my humanity, but like I am really curious about centering, Black, queer, and trans voices. And so after about doing that for 3 years, her and I had a conversation, and basically she was like, would you be interested in starting your own venture? And her family and her gifted me with $250,000 to start JAG. And so I started JAG Productions in 2016. And it's really great to actually go through that right now, because there was a, like, when I think, like, JAG was kind of like the culmination of my time in Vermont, but like, the work that was happening in between, like it was slow, it was difficult, and it's reminding me about, the transitions that I've had in the past few months and how it feels kind of crazy, but like there's something on the other side of the crazy. And so I ran JAG for almost 10 years, which was a truly beautiful experience, bringing Black and queer playwrights, actors to Vermont in this residency style venture, creating stories, partnering with organizations and institutions to do an outdoor theater series when we came out of the pandemic, partnering with the New York Institution to do a co-production of this play that was developed throughout Newark's Play Festival, and then we premiered it in Vermont and then moved it off Broadway to New York, and then the pandemic happened and we had to shut, and we couldn't do the run. Started the Black Joy Project, which was a project that was created during the pandemic, centering this question, like, can Black folk make art without any nod to white people? And it was like this investigation about whether or not we can do that and what needs to happen to do that. Like, there's a level of exorcism that has to happen from our psyche to be able to like let go of like the white narrative that gets influenced in our storytelling. And various different things. Started a musical theater lab, which was kind of, this process of decentralizing like white aesthetics in American musical theater, keeping the lyrics and the dramaturgy the same, but like adding Black and queer voices to just bring more context and depth to some musicals like Next to Normal, like West Side Story, like Oklahoma, et cetera. But amongst all the kind of gorgeous work that we were doing and presenting, the underbelly of all of this is like the not-for-profit model, which got in the way of the work, right? The not-for-profit was created like 70 years ago for something very specific, and that same model just is doesn't work well for today's world, today's art making, especially when you're trying to center Black and queer voices. And I was trying to bring this like collectiveness to the way that I was running the organization, where it just wasn't top down, like I'm the founder and all the decisions have to come from me, but like truly trying to get buy-in from everybody, that it what you know like it you are a part of this because you understand the power and the importance of centering Black and queer voices, not solely your connection to me. Like, so this is like beyond me, and I think so many people were just like doing it because they liked me and loved me, and I was really trying to get folks to think about the bigger picture so that they were charged to kind of take action in their own right, and like and truly sink their teeth and making it last. But the sad story is it ended up just sitting in my lap all the time. Every single aspect of it. And I remember there was a moment in 2022 where I got, for the first time, I got what folks call a burnout. I got diagnosed with depression and couldn't get out of bed. I was like, what is going on? I had no, like, my life force like felt gone. And I talked to some people on the board, particularly my treasurer, and I was like, I need to take a break. And she looked me in the eye, was like, well, if you take a break, like there won't be a JAG.
Wow. And so, it's kind of like, so what good is that, right? Like, if what you created can't live beyond you or with you at the center, what does that really mean
What does that
for
really mean?
community?
that what does that mean for community? And it's like, why are we all here then?
Yeah.
Why do we go through the process of like the performance of board meetings every month, like this executive committee functions, all of these kind of things where it's just like you have all of these people around you and wanting to show up, but the moment
Wow.
I can't, then it's like, oh, so that's when it started to shift for me. That's when I was like, oh, this, I don't know about this. And I started questioning it, and I kept pushing through, and I kept pushing through, and I kept pushing through. And in 2024, I got some funding to get a coach, a life coach. And this person had been in the not-for-profit world for a long time. In fact, they were sitting on a committee that awarded us $100,000 to do the Black Joy Project, but they're not in the not-for-profit anymore. They're a consultant. And I started working with him, and just to kind of like excavate like how to manage my personal life, this organization, and like what does it mean to sit with this information, and like what do I do with it? Because there was like conflicting things, but I think I was in this moment of like always trying to feel like that there was something that I needed to get better at and do. And he was like, I don't think you need to. You've at this point, this is like 9 years. Like this idea that you're in this constant effort to want to learn something else, want to do something else. Like it's important for us to continue to learn, but like it
Yes.
was a cycle that I was like never enough.
Yes. Yes.
Like that I was never enough to
Yeah.
keep it going.
Yeah.
And go ahead, you have a question?
Yeah. I like that
Yes, please.
conversation. So that current of never enough, which is, that's taught to us by the world. Do you feel like in any way you are leading with that energy? Like subconsciously, maybe?
And of course, of course, of course. Like always feeling like I needed to have the perfect curtain speech, always feeling like I needed to say the right words to the artist on their first day of rehearsal to, because I mean, this has a lot to do with being like a gifted child, right? I was kind of a little child prodigy as a singer at 10 years old. I got discovered, got into this boy choir, left the hood of South Carolina into like this private school, and traveled the world singing classical boy choir, secular like music, right? And so from then on, I mean, in classical music, there's like this perfection to it, right? And so from that point on, like I subconsciously, like in all of my interactions and all of my creative endeavors, was like seeking this level of perfection that was actually debilitating me. Like it was actually, keeping me from like enjoying it. I think it's rare, and I said this to some people. I'm like, there are few times that I think that that I really enjoyed some of the work that I did.
I get that. And I feel like my mom's passing allowed me to have like a time for breathing space to really like begin to rest, let my shoulders down and connect some dots. Certainly being here in Montreal with you has even exasperated that, right? Because as we both, as we, so you know, we had a meeting before the meeting, call before the call, the conversation before the conversation, and we both were talking about, like, just like looking in a way how we can connect with people in this new country that we're in, right?
Yes,
Right. So we were having
yes.
that conversation before this call. So because I don't have that yet, it's given me a lot of time to reflect and connect dots to things that I was so busy moving that I was missing.
Yes,
Right. And so I have
yes.
my own ensemble that I also disbanded. And I wonder if you can relate to this, because when you were talking about the joy, I would always feel like I was never doing anything. Like I would always say, I feel like I haven't done anything. Like I feel like I haven't accomplished anything. And I remember we had a sold out standing room only show. Ebony directed it at the New Yorican Cat, right? Poetry Cafe in New York. And it was a great night. Like everything was just like, so good. Like it was an ensemble. It was like lots of different artists and my show. It was like a showcase and dancing, singing, poetry, the whole thing. It was amazing. And afterwards, we went out for dinner. And I just felt like this almost not depression, but like just this weird, why don't I feel happy right now? I don't have, did you experience that at all, or were you too busy moving that you didn't, or did you not have that like the air got let out of the balloon after the show was over?
Yeah, I mean, I would start to feel that feeling once we got into like tech rehearsal, because I had already seen it. So I was like, I had already seen what the thing was going to be. And so it was here. And so there was like a grieving, because I'm like, oh, now I have to interact. Like, now we have to interact with the audience. Like, now we're not in that kind of playing, figuring things out stage. Like, now the thing has to actually be done. And like, I would start feeling that grief and loss, like, once we started, like, once the audience came, essentially, like, once the audience came, I was just like, oh, yeah. And like, it's funny going back to what you were saying about not enough. I was talking to my mother yesterday, and I was like, gosh, I don't have energy. I don't have the same energy that I used to have, and da 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 da. And she was like, what did you do today? I was like, took Rue to the daycare. I cleaned my apartment. I did some laundry. And she was like, boy, like, you better stop saying that, because you th there was energy. You did something. And I was like, oh shit. Oh shit. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, I
it's
do.
like, you got up, you did some things. Did you do that entire list that you wanted to do? And like, that's why you're upset? Like, no. But like, some people, when they say they don't have energy, literally cannot get out of the bed and won't get out of the bed. And I think that has a lot to do with that, like, being enough. Am I doing enough? You know?
Definitely. And pushing our body beyond its limits. So what do you think the sort of emotional impact of closing JAG and sort of the challenge of stepping away was or is, if you're still like mourning that error, what does that look like?
I have moments of just being like, especially through this process of writing this book and going through and like remembering, I'm like, wait, this was magical. Did I make the wrong decision? You know,
Oh, wow. Interesting.
I have moments like that, and then I have to ground myself that I'm like, no, the work is actually continuing. I'm like, I am a benefactor of that work. And so are so many artists. And so not only is happening through this book, it's going to happen in every creative process that I do beyond JAG, right? Like the work lives and is a part of me. So I have moments where I'm just like, oh my God, why did I shouldn't have closed it. But like, it was not sustainable for like, it was not sustainable for me. And I think part of the healing was that like I started letting go of things that was helping me like keep up with it, right? Like, I mean, before I went sober this past October, I experienced with like moments of like not drinking. But like when I started like taking substances away and like really doing some deep healing, I realized how I was pushing my body beyond what it can do. And so once I started to like take things away, I realized at how much I was doing and like recognized that it's like, oh no, I am one person.
I know.
I am one person.
Yeah. And that's why we're tired.
And that's why we're tired.
Yeah. I did a timeline a couple of weeks ago about what my life has been like just last year alone, and then definitely for the past 4 years. And when I looked at it, I was like, oh, this is why I'm tired. And I think we're so used to moving, shaking, making things happen again, that we're just not paying attention in the ways that we could. But at least now we have clues, we have breadcrumbs, as my friend Amy Miranda likes to say, for the next time. These things that, so now we know, hopefully, know better. And we'll take care of ourselves better.
I've been learning that, I like my high standards have just like clashed with my own, like with what my body truly like needs. And like I and even just like my tension of like not wanting to like go to the gym, I'm like, what's underneath that is that like I don't want to go because I don't feel like I will be 100%. That's why, because I don't feel like I will be able to be the most like the like to slay, because my body is just like wanting to move slowly, and I want to like do 20 exercises and do it at the max. And because I know that I can't do that, I don't want to go.
Yes. But you went.
But I went. But I'm like, but that's what's underneath this shit. It's like, so it's interesting this time right now that we have to sit and grieve and reflect and honor ourselves and our bodies.
And you had multiple losses last year, like we talked about earlier, the passing of your fur baby, the end of your relationship. How did you navigate that? What do you want to say about that, those losses?
They say it come in threes, don't they? It all came crashing. Closing JAG was one thing. Saying goodbye to Jameson was another thing. But during those two losses, I was able to hold that, or maybe not deal with it, through being in a relationship with someone. So that person was able to navigate those things with me, essentially. So therefore, it's like half of dealing with it. And then when And then there was in the sprinkle of that, there were highs. I got engaged. I got engaged. It was a two. We both. It was always our plan to propose to each other. She proposed to me first. Those are her new pronouns. When we were together, it was he, him. And she proposed to me first, this gorgeous proposal, on her birthday, June 14th, in Riverside Park, blocks from our apartment, New York apartment in Harlem. I had this huge brunch planned for her on her birthday, and we were on our way to brunch, and she proposed to me, and unbeknownst to me, she had hired a giant artist who I've known for a while to do video, and another JAG artist to capture imagery, and they were all like hiding in a tree. And my best friend Richard and his brother all came out of the tree, and like, and I it was the surprise of my life. I had no clue because I organized her birthday, and we were going to this restaurant called Community Food and Juice, and they were going to hang out in Central Park. We get to Central Park, and it was like this basically engagement party with like all of our friends celebrating us. So boom, that happened after closing JAG, and we got engaged. And then in July, I proposed to her. And weeks after I proposed to her, Jameson passed away. Jameson was actually part of our proposal because it was on a lake and she was in the canoe with us. He was in the canoe with us, Jameson. And in late August, went to a trip to, after this proposal, went to a trip to Ireland with her family. And on that trip, she broke up with me. And that was like the shock of my life. Let me tell you, that was the shock of my life. And first of all, people don't talk enough about what it takes to pull yourself out of pulling yourself up from like the ashes from a life that when you thought you had a life, a specific kind of life where you like where it was planned and shaped and dreamt and all the things, and then in a blink of an eye that all changes, and the work that one has to do to start carving, like almost immediately having to deal with the grief, to deal with the trauma and the shock of that. While you're dealing with that, you have to do logistics of where you go, have to do logistics on where you're gonna live, what is next, where you're gonna, we had a house together, like getting things out of the house, like being in a different country when this all happened.
No time to prepare, no time to.
No time to prepare, but like it's weird to say, but ADHD people are like built for crisis.
I need to get tested.
We're wired for crisis because you know what? Our brains think like they move fast. Our
Crisis.
brains move fast.
Crisis management.
Crisis management. Crisis management.
Top tier.
Like top tier. So which was good, which I'm grateful that was there because that allowed me to go into production mode, essentially.
Because immediately
I mean, you go to sleep on Tuesday, you wake up on Wednesday, and the relationship's over. Like, no
And the
clue.
relationship's over.
Yeah.
And it's almost like someone says, here's $50,000 to put up the show. Or, you know what I mean? Or like, here's a like in overnight, you got to be like, okay, like how do it would be like, it's almost as if someone called me and was like, Jarvis, this thing happened to me. Like I would do the same thing. I would like help them plan it to a T, and I had to go into activation mode and like do it for myself. Like I was just like,
Yeah.
you know, and I think the challenge of it, and I'm so glad that I'm on the other side of it. It was just like, as someone who does deep reflection on me first, like I'm always, because it's, you know, we talked about this of not being enough. Like I'm always in an argument with someone. If there's a disagreement, I'm always gonna throw it back on me.
Yes.
And but like with this thing, I was struck. Like my big thing was like, how could they do that to me? Which was like a different way of dealing with conflict. I had never, and I was just in this deep like feeling of like, oh, how could they do this to me? And that emotion was really hard to deal with because I was conflicted by that feeling because it was different from any other version of how I've dealt with conflict, you know? And I think it was because it was like, this is happening and this is happening. But like it was, there was no mediation there. And I was like, I'm like, relationship wasn't built on that. And there was like this deep, deep like mistrust. I was like, whoa, this, I don't even recognize this in us as people.
Because you
Like,
hadn't moved like that bef in the time that you were together before. Wow.
no. And I mean, quite honestly, I think it was just it that was the supremacy, that was the white supremacy of it all. Like to make a decision and like not even to make a decision on your own. Make a decision on your own and not even try to work that thing out, talk that thing out. Even if it like I had a proposal just being like, I know there's a lot going on. Let's get back to our safety and our comfort to talk this through. Like
Yeah.
I know we're on this trip with the family. Like let's, you know, and I think that there was this maybe this notion of just being like, I don't know if it was a conversation they have had or just maybe some, yeah, supremacy. It was just like, I think underneath all of that was like, if you're going to make a decision, you're just going to have to do it and cut it off.
With no
Like
care.
with no care. With no care. With no care.
I think that's where the cuts come from. That's where the grief comes from, you know,
Yes. Yes.
the callousness
Yes.
of the act.
Yes. Yes.
I'll share with you that I had an ex that lived around the corner from me, and I saw him on a Sunday, and he was supposed to come to my house on a Monday, and he moved to Florida instead.
Oh, okay.
I went to his house because he was supposed to come over and call. And I went around literally the next block, went to his house. His car was gone, knocked on the door, called him, went straight to voicemail. And I said, I know this motherfucker didn't leave the state and not say goodbye. Child,
Just gone.
I went on Facebook and he was like, driving to Florida, have a show to do tonight, hashtag grateful.
Wow. What?
Yes. After like begging me to have his child for months. Yeah. And me actually considering it at my big age after all these years of like being child free. Yeah. Only for him to like literally move to another state and not tell me.
And not tell you. Do you talk to this person?
No. No, I've spoken with him since, but not now. I haven't spoken with him probably since 2020. Yeah, people be out here just doing horrible stuff.
People be out here just doing horrible stuff. People be out here
Yeah.
journaling in their heads about stuff and like actually not talking, like
Yeah.
not communicating at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I mean, definitely a wedding is totally different. Like we didn't have houses, we didn't have all of those things at all. And at the same time, it's like that level of callousness should be studied.
It should be
Should
studied.
be
It should be
studied.
studied.
Yeah. Yeah. Callousness and meanness, I would say.
And meanness and meanness. And this is how I know it's like it has to like I can't quite describe like the supremacy of it. Because it's like I didn't. I mean, there was like supremacy nature in like the family dynamic. That there's just like they don't see or whatever, but like I actually didn't think that they had it like to I'm like, oh, if you could just do that, if you could just do that. 5 years and you just be like in another country, peace, deuces. My family's here. I'm gonna go to their Airbnb. I'm gonna switch our flight and I'm going.
And you're ass out.
That's what.
I mean, you're not ass out because you're Jarvis. You're gonna
No.
like make it, you're gonna make it happen. But emotionally, spiritually, ass out because what?
Because what? We
I
were
just.
engaged. You got to be my boo. We're planning a wedding.
Right,
We
right.
just got we just we just got a new dog. Rhubarb. Rhubarb was we had rhubarb for like 3 weeks before we went on this trip.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that as somebody that's gone through various forms of betrayals, that when it's something like so egregious, what I've come to, I guess what's helped me come to peace with it is that it's like the ancestors. Like,
Yes.
I'm just like, you know
Yes.
what? It's the
Yes.
ancestors protecting me because you know what?
Yes.
There's
Yes.
something that that
Yeah.
y'all are
Yeah.
saving me from that I can't
Yeah.
see. Like, that's just how
Yeah.
I've chosen to like look at it at this point. Of
Yeah.
course, in the grieving
Yeah.
process, it's different, right? It's the same. I went through the same thing. How could you do this to me? How could you do this to
Yeah.
me? Loud. Like,
Yeah.
what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah. But now I'm like, you know what, ancestors, y'all did y'all big one. Thank you.
The big,
Yeah.
big,
Yeah.
big, big,
Yeah.
big. And so there's this big kind of return home, essentially, to myself, to what I think I've finally gotten to a place where it's like I don't have to, I'm not thinking about, like, I would have these like flashbacks. I'm like, oh, like the life that we were gonna have. And like now I have gotten to the place where I'm like, oh no, I don't want that. It's finally got there. 'Cause I was like, God, I don't want to wake up with these shockwaves like that. I'm like, I'm not trying to think about it in this way. I want to move. And I think finally and breathing isn't linear at all. So I know that there's gonna be a moment where but like right now, I'm kind of like, okay, like I'm that is not what I want. At all. And there has been the forgiveness has happened and is happening in my spirit and my psyche. And I haven't rushing it. Like it just arrived where it's just like, because I think the transness is a part of the story. And I mean I have, and people might listen to this and be like, hell no, but like I have empathy for anyone that is battling with anything inside that they feel like that they cannot express until it's too much and it bursts open and hurt people along the way. Like they're the way that it all went down, I'm not happy about, but like I have empathy, for people that struggle in that way, and they were struggling with some stuff.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it, Jarvis. Yeah, because it's like a big lash out.
It was a big lash out.
No,
It's a big lash out. And
that's a good way to look at it, for real.
And I've seen them since the breakup. I saw her recently, and I guess all like I'm I guess what I can say is like they have a lot going on. They have a lot going on, and I'm grateful that I've been in the weeds of the work. I really, truly am. Like, I feel like a different person. I feel like a different person,
And so sort of as we weave through these weeds of your journey, of your story, I'd love to hear what helped you, what is helping you to move through like the art, your spiritual practice, like what's helping you to get to the other side?
Ritual, 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 ritual. Finding ritual in the mundane, like learning that every day, everything doesn't have to be this kebab, 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 like taking pleasure in looking at myself in the mirror in the morning and affirming what I see, what is there. Looking at the toothpaste as I put it on the toothbrush, being in my body and presence as I'm brushing my teeth, sitting and meditating. Everyone talks about it a lot, but like it's really it's like it's changing cells in my body, I feel like. It's like when I meditate, it feels like like I'm washing my brain. Like I literally, it literally feels like a big cleansing of my,
Oh, I love it.
yeah, you
I love
know,
it.
like I'm like, and like oftentimes when I've done, I'm like, that was good. Like that was good.
Yeah.
I think that keeping my apartment tidy, I feel like keeps demons away.
Yes.
You know,
Yeah, you know. I know.
lighting my jasmine incense. I have a manifestation journal, the 369 method. I don't know if you're familiar with the 369 method. So writing in my manifestation journal, I think that truly 100% honoring my body's rhythm. Like that one, I still have work to do, but that has been the biggest one for me. It's like honoring my body's like natural rhythm and just like noticing what I'm like, how my mind is at war with like what I'm like trying to do, which is basically trying to escape the feelings. Because it's like I want to have a jam-packed schedule day with going to the library to do this and da 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 da. And like my body, some days, a lot of days, is like, can we move a little bit slower? Can we do that writing in a bathtub with Epsom salt, then you do a voice memo and then transcribe it? And we do that instead, you know?
We can.
You know?
Definitely.
Yeah, those are my, you know, having conversations with you. I think our initial meeting and what we talked about in our session around ritual has been really helpful for me. Like it's like my morning practices are very sacred to me, and I before I step out of my bed, I have to like meditate in my bed. And oftentimes, and sometimes, like when I just have to like get up and go, like the past mornings that I've had to take root early, you know, I like after our call today, I'm gonna sit. But those have been helpful for me, trying to move my body as much as I can. It doesn't look like what it used to look like, and that's okay. Tea, eating good food, watching some television, talking to like the reading, like connecting to people that really bring me back home to myself, is important. So
Beautiful.
simple, simple.
Yeah, simple things. Simple things. Well, I thank you for this conversation. This has been
Thank
so
you.
good. And I
Thank
want
you.
to hear, any sort of last words you have, or definitely how can people find you? How can people support your work?
People can find me on Instagram, Jarvis_Antonio. And then for Le Cookbook Club, it's Le Cookbook Club MTL on Instagram. So you can find me on those platforms. I'm just grateful that you asked. It feels good to kind of get back in being in the world and having conversations with people. This feels really good, and I have another conversation coming up with Vermont Public Radio here soon. So it's like the timing is very interesting. But yeah, I'm grateful for this opportunity, and I look forward to listening to all your other interviews.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that lead-in.
Of course, of course.
Thank you for that lead-in to the next show. So I'm very excited for episode 6, The Unmitigated Funk of Healing with Baba Marcus. And so, in that conversation, what we're going to be talking about is what does it mean to hold a community's grief without losing yourself, right? Like to be the person who catches the sorrow, to be the person who listens to the joys, to be the person who carries the weight of a community without crushing you. So I'm going to sit down with an artist, musician, and a cultural keeper who spent his life channeling, grief into power, pain into art. And it's going to be a great, great conversation. And so I also want to hear from y'all about how you keep yourself, how you're keeping yourselves from losing yourselves when you hold space for other people. So, reach out to me. Let me know all about it. Join me in these powerful conversations. Jarvis, I want to thank you again. This was so good. And yeah, tune in next Tuesday for another episode. And remember, no one should be standing on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.